I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Hello and welcome to Here's Where It Went Wrong, the podcast where every week we have one of our favorite comedians to talk about one of their favorite things in history, pop culture, and sports, and trace its history back to find out exactly where it went off the rails. I'm joined, as always, by my fantastic co-host, Andrew Nadeau. Andrew, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I think this is our first episode where it is actually all pop culture, history, and sports in a single episode.
Oh, shit. We're going to hit the trifecta today.
We got all three. Yeah. Well, this is our first winter episode, too, because it snowed in Chicago 2 days ago. First snow of the season. I always get very excited. My girlfriend hates it. She, you know, texts me. It's like, cool, this means we're going to be locked inside for like 2 months. And I'm like a four-year-old. It's like, no, but it's pretty. And she's like, cool, you're an adult. You have outdoor responsibilities.
Yeah, you know you have to leave. Well, before you had to leave.
Right, now it's a
you
bit
don't
easier.
You don't really have to leave anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So finally, this is finally a win for me. So yeah, we've got our winter episode going, and I'm doing good.
Man, that's great. Man, when it started snowing the other day, I lost my mind for like a good 20. I was just, the second I looked out, and I had that moment first of, oh, it's so pretty, immediately followed by, this is what my life is going to be like for the next 7 months in Chicago.
Yeah, that's where Anna goes immediately. After we get like the fourth snow where it sticks, then I start getting annoyed. But I can enjoy, I can ride this for a while.
Congratulations for being able to live in the moment, Andrew.
My childlike wonder is just never ending.
Well, guys, today we have on a very fantastic comedian. You have seen her work in the AV Club, Vulture, Variety. You've seen her comedic work on Twitter and The Onion. She also has her own podcast out, TV I Say, with Ashley Ray. Guys, Ashley Ray, how you doing?
Hi, good. I'm so happy to be here. So happy to be on your winter episode.
Our very first winter episode. I mean, again, just giddy. I realize I should not be this excited about the changing of seasons. It happens every year, but we're so glad we could have you for this.
Yeah, I mean, I moved to LA like a few months ago, right. And I miss the seasons. I miss winter, so... I wish I was seeing that Chicago snow.
Good. You've got please. This vicarious connection now. I mean, LA, I assume, well, I mean, you know, everything's on fire right now in California, so probably not great. Yeah. But other than that...
I mean, right now, it's just been like fireworks. That's all I can describe as the weather with like the Dodgers winning.
Oh,
it's
that's right.
Fireworks.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I guess fireworks is weather. Yeah.
It is right now.
It
the
is.
Way they're doing
it.
They've made it weather.
I love, by the way, that this is dropping on Election Day, but we're just like, guys, it's the winter episode.
Look, we've got Election Day content, but honestly, I want to know what happens first. I want to know how depressing this show should be. So we've got a guest lined up, and we've got some really good historical American political history. Historical history, that is solid professional way to speak. We've got some American political history and a really good guest for you. But yeah, I wanted to see how this turns out first. So right now, let's listen to this before you see the results and enjoy the winter, because it could be rough in a couple hours.
Oh yeah, could be a long winter ahead. So let's enjoy these beautiful moments of cold weather.
So let's talk about absolutely anything else other than politics.
Absolutely.
And guys, we're going to talk about something that I look forward to every 4 years. We're going to talk about figure skating today.
Yeah, we dug deep. We got into the history of skating, which goes back super far. We managed to trace this all the way back to 1800 BCE in Scandinavia. Previous records suggested only 1000 BCE, but after a couple years ago, Federico Frumenti suggests, no, this was actually earlier. The first skating was bone skates. They took the shank or rib bones of elk, oxen, reindeer, something similar. These were the original skates. This was used for transportation at the time. And this was typically done in heavily canaled areas. This is where you would be traveling by boat. It's winter. You now need a way to get across ice. So bones, not like regular skates, or something sharp. You can't push off. You just got a big stick and you propel yourself like you have a gondola. but you're standing on bone to do it. And this was the history of skating, not figure skating yet. I mean, they might have looked good doing it. We don't know. But it was mostly transportation at this point.
I just want to start off, just so we know, has anyone here ever done any kind of competitive ice skating?
So actually, what kind of made me passionate about this topic is that I don't do figure skating. I don't like ice. You fall, it's cold. I don't like that. You gotta wear coats. What I currently do is aggressive quad skating. So that is roller skating outdoors on ramps, which I think is cooler than figure skating.
Absolutely.
But my passion for quad skating came because I thought figure skating is so interesting. It's history. Roller skating, not in the Olympics. So
yet.
It should be.
What, just the X Games? No, it should be an Olympic sport.
It should be. That's another podcast. Oh my God.
I'm so glad I asked this question now. I was expecting all of us to be like, no, but then you bust out, I've been like hardcore quad skating.
It was actually, I decided to kind of take the training seriously when I saw the iTanya movie. That was what kind of made me go like, skating is a thing I could really like do. I got my roller skates, started taking like classes to really learn how to do it outside. But figure skating is like the prettier sister. So, you know, every 4 years I'm happy to support the prettier sister of what I do. But at the same time, there's some jealousy. There's some issues there.
The quad skating, is this like the speed skating or is this more like figure skating where it's more, you know, dance performance based?
Yeah, it's more like figure skating. Okay. It's more dance performance based. There's some where it's maybe more, you're like a roller ring type deal, you know, where you see people like going backwards doing stuff like that. But it also has like a hardcore aspect where you're someone who like does ramps and bowls. And that's what I'm training to do. I am not very good yet. I can grind. I can do a few tricks, but you know, it's a little cooler.
I heard Wen ask the question, and I thought, why would Wen ask this? What is the chance we would have a guest that has this kind of skill? These are not our peers.
I'm losing my mind at how much I love this right
now.
This
is fantastic.
I feel like most people don't even know aggressive quad skating is a thing.
I'm learning on my own podcast today. And I love it.
People are always like, oh, as a kid, I used to love going to the roller rink for my birthday. And it's like, actually, full grown adults have turned this into a really fun, great sport. There's some great women who lead it too, which is another reason that pulled me in. Women are kind of the biggest people in the aggressive quad skating rink.
Oh.
And like you'll see them like all over the world, like just going through the streets, because it's kind of aggressive quad skating is kind of like, okay, can you do tricks? But it's also how can you skate in public areas? So you see people go through like very crowded markets or malls and just try to like weave through as many people as they can.
So like part of like the trick is not injuring a child.
Yes, not injuring a child or yourself. I have injured myself many times, so I'm no pro.
Sure. So this is parkour on skates. This is fantastic. I can't believe we didn't know this existed. Obviously, this is our next episode. Forget politics. We got to talk about this forever now.
I'm loving this. No, my history with skating. So I was an avid, like, oh, roller rink birthdays, these are the best.
Yeah.
And around like sixth grade, I go to the roller rink and like they do like the races around, and it's like whoever could do four laps around. And like I was so confident in my skating. I'm in the lead. I'm going. Some kid grabs the back of my shirt and like yanks me to the ground. I just bounce off the floor. I looked like Quasimodo for like 3 weeks. Just like the biggest goose egg right above my eye. And like I was like in school, like trying to hide it, like I am not a monster. Like that was like my entire, like, imagine sixth grade too. Like you're already like happy to be seen, but to be seen with like this giant Quasimodo face was awful for me. It was
and
just not a good
lost.
Time.
Oh, and also, everyone's
and
like,
I lost
you're
the
a
race.
Loser.
No, I didn't even, I would like to say that I got up and finished it, but no, I cried and skated off the rink.
Yeah, that's the appropriate response. This was the end of Wen's roller derby career. This is a fantastic history. I did not know this about either of you guys. I'm learning so much.
Yeah. I'm only now realizing, like, wow, could I get skates that are made out of oxen bones?
Right.
That sounds hardcore. Like, that's what I need to roller derby with.
Well, here's the thing. Not a good idea, because apparently you need, like, sticks to, like, push yourself around. It's more like skiing than it is like modern skating.
Bones were ideal for this as long as you're willing to propel with another source. But it wasn't until we got into the metal skates, which is like 13th century, that they start developing. But actually, 12th century was one of my favorite things because it's the earliest written record of skates. And it's from William Fitzstevens. It's in a book about Thomas Becket. William Fitzstevens is a monk in Canterbury. And my favorite quote from this book is he's talking about a scene he saw beyond the northern walls of Canterbury. He says, as the moors in Finbury and Moorfield freeze over, children from London play. Some of the children have attached bones to their ankles and carry well-worn sticks. They fly across the ice like birds or well-fired arrows. Suddenly, two children will run at each other, sticks held high in the air. They then attack each other until one falls down. Often, the children injure their heads or break their arms or legs. Which, again, this is 12th century. This is a death sentence. This is you break your arm or leg or head. You die. But it's like, yeah. This is just kids hanging out.
That's real passion. That's real passion for skating.
And there's just one monk who's just sitting at the side, just watching kids kill each other and just being like, this material rocks. This book's going to rule.
Also, like, the sticks are, again, these aren't hockey sticks. This is what they use to propel themselves, but he still notes, held high in the air. They have turned their method of propulsion into weapons immediately. Before even metal skates exist, they've got bones, and kids are finding a way to make this as dangerous as possible. So, 13th century, you introduce the metal blade, which is basically attached to a wood plank, which you strap to your shoe. This is also right before the Little Ice Age starts, which is 1300 to 1850. A couple peak periods in 1650, 1770, 1850. But this is where it starts to develop, where you've got the really cold winters. Again, in the Scandinavian countries, you need a way to get around. This has become more useful. Little Ice Age, by the way, not a real Ice Age. This was really only affecting part of the world. Possible causes were cyclical lows in solar radiation, volcanic activity, variation in orbit, axial tilt, and also just decrease in human population, because a lot of people have died from the Black Plague. And I mention this because if we have a single climate change denier, I want them to know this is not any indication that supports your theory that this is fake. This was a completely different thing.
It's actually how the planet cools itself, by killing off a bunch of people, and then like everything gets chillier.
Exactly.
But then you get to figure skate.
Right. So obviously well worth it at this point. So we get to the 17th, 18th century. It also becomes more of a sport for the wealthy in parts of Europe. Emperor Rudolf II of the Holy Roman Empire, King Louis XVI of France, Madame de Pompadour, Napoleon I and III. So in these areas in France and England, it's a sport for the wealthy. And in the farther north, this is the this is how you get around and survive the winter. And it's this weird juxtaposition of skating starting to become closer to what it is today. It starts to find its own middle ground.
They start with the clubs. They have skating clubs.
Yes.
And like a big thing for them is what they call figure skating, which is not like the majestic thing now. It's just like, hey, look, I can go around in a figure eight.
It's right. Yeah. That's where the name is.
Very basic tricks. But yeah, this is when figure skating becomes very elitist, very white, very what we know today.
Right away.
You know, the kind of country club idea of figure skating very much comes from this. Very white. You know, it's also a cold sport, so white sport.
It absolutely, the very first one is in Edinburgh, in formed in 1740, but some claim that it started as early as 1642. And the admission to pass this test was you had to go in circles on one leg, so a figure eight, and then you had to jump over one, two, and then three hats placed over each other. This was how you had to prove you were the elite skater for the Edinburgh Skating Club. Why not just start with three hats? Dude, they're not accepted at one. I've got a lot of issues with this, honestly.
Andrew, my main question is, this three hats placed one in front of the other and your goal is distance, or is this the hats are placed on top of one another and the goal is height?
So the suggestion here is over suggesting on top of each other. Now, this is also this, I did not do research on this, but this is 1740 Scotland, which means that it's going to be most likely the tri-corner hat.
Andrew has this thing where he just like drops history things and it proves he's smart, but also proves that like I'm not smart.
Yeah. Naturally, the trifold hat.
As long as we're doing this, the tri-corner hat is popular in the mid-1700s. This is the eventually records the bi-corner hat, the one that Napoleon wears. But you see this is the Paul Revere hat. And this is very popular in the time. What interesting though, this is right before wigs make their comeback. And wigs make their comeback because of an outbreak of syphilis. And syphilis causes thinning hair. Obviously, you don't want to be seen to have syphilis. So wigs blow, which I love this just because I imagine like in 1750, they don't have hats to jump over anymore. It's like, no, man, we got to put the wigs down and just just make do. No, so there's a syphilis outbreak.
Piles of wigs.
It's massive. It spreads across Europe. So wigs take over so people can pretend they have hair. And this is actually where the term big wig comes from, because they start being sold for thousands of dollars to the elite, up to $10,000 in modern money. And also around 1795, it drops out because instead the association was reversed to where if you're wearing a wig, it means you have syphilis.
Andrew, I'm so mad. I just tried to get you on. We tried to get you with how tall the hat was. You gave us the history of the hat before this hat. You gave us a history of this hat. And you gave us a history of wigs and why they were worn afterwards, up until when wigs went out of style. That is how smart you are.
And the shifting views of syphilis.
Yeah.
Throughout history. And how people were perceived.
We just tried to do a fun gotcha on how tall was the hat, Andrew. And you went on this tangent that's never made me feel more. For one, I was super interested in everything you had to say, and I learned a lot. And two, I am feeling so inferior to your history knowledge.
Look, I would not be doing this podcast if I didn't think I had a random, completely useless piece of knowledge for absolutely every situation. Do not need to know this. Again, we did Freddy Krueger. I had to Google, like, was he the guy with the knives?
But he was. I did. I was the lead on that one.
Right. But no, weird history stuff. Yeah, I'm on it.
I will say, speaking from my aggressive quad skating experience, that putting the hats on top of each other to go for height makes a lot of sense, because you want to prove that you have the control power. It's not just about how far, how high you can jump, but you also want to show people, I can do a little jump, I can do a medium jump, I can do the big jump. And that'll be kind of important later, because your ability to control your jump becomes kind of one of the defining things of success in figure skating. And it really kind of will tell people what kind of jumps you can do.
Oh, so is that why they did the 1, 2, and 3 then? I thought it was like working your way up.
Yeah, I would imagine that it was to prove, like, hey, I have this kind of control over my jumps. And it would also have to do with distance, because to get certain jumps off the ground, you have to be able to prove you can lift yourself to certain heights.
That is, we've just got this range of knowledge here that is so unexpected.
I'm loving this. I'm barely able to really have any good input, but I am happy to interject with how smart you guys are and how much I love it.
Well, we've got to do a hat episode. There was a riot the first time a top hat was worn. We can cover that some episode.
I cannot wait for that one.
I won't distract with my questions. Yeah.
No, I mean, we got time. We got, look, it's a small riot. Honestly, there's something just that might not have really happened. But basically, the hat was too tall and shiny. And they said, he's got to be doing this to screw with people and riot.
But could anyone jump over it?
No, that was it. If the top had been around at this point, this was not for them like 40 years, then skating never would have happened had the top had been around right then.
I'm gonna say, did this happen in America? Is that where it occurred? I just feel like that's such an American thing to be like, Oh, that hat? You think you're better than me? You think you're better than me with your hat?
This was England in 1797, I think. But yeah, so basically at this point, all hats were mostly fur, and this one is silk instead. So it's shiny and it's big, and people are just like, fuck you, no.
We laugh, but there's every now and then, like, a celebrity will wear something on a runway and everyone on Twitter is just spending all day just like, you son of a bitch. Yeah. Fuck you. Like,
why did you think you could wear this?
It was insane. And supposedly he was charged, he said, for attempting to intimidate the meek, basically. I mean, it was this insane response, but his stories look back. It's like, look, there was an article about this at the time, but who knows what really happened. But I'm sorry, I'm sidetracking us from skating, which we have so much to cover. So you want to go and get to like the 19th century?
So the winners, you know, they remain cold. People were able to ice skate. They were able to kind of set up these, you know, rinks and everything pretty much wherever it was cold. However, there then became this big artificial rink craze for the elites that went around. And they figured that they were going to make artificial ice out of what was hog lard and salt. And they don't have the ability to refrigerate. So can you imagine trying to go on a romantic evening of ice skating? And you're just smelling slaughtered pig, lightly seasoned.
Like, right. If you had the technology to keep this cold enough, you would be using ice. This is a bad idea.
Yeah. Like, somebody threw it out there and everyone was just like on board immediately. And then they did it to scale and they're like, fuck this.
Like, that's just how badly they had to skate. That's how deep the passion goes. You know, just imagine these like fancy rich people just like,
gotta skate on that lard.
Just starves over their noses. Just like, I gotta get my fix.
So it, not surprisingly, does not last too long because people can only put up with so much. But they've also started mass producing skates as cheap as 25 cents in 1862, which, you know, is not 25 cents today, but still enough that the average person can afford it, which is a big shift because there also aren't really private rinks, which mean this is an event where you have people of different classes associating. Everyone dresses nice to go ice skating. This is an event, but you don't have people of different classes, but it's also one of the few events that's not sexually segregated. You can have single men and women skating together. Absolute scandal. But they're surprisingly cool with it. Everyone's like, well, we got to skate, man. What do you want us to do?
You fly like a bird. Yeah. It's so much fun.
In 1876, they had the first mechanically frozen ice rinks. So these were, they pretty much laid out copper pipes that were carrying glycerin, nitrogen peroxide, and water. The pipes were covered by water and then pretty much would push through the solution in order to keep everything frozen. Which, honestly, to me, that's like, how did you even come up with that in 1876?
Yeah, this is actually a guy who is trying to ship meat from other countries came up with it. And then he's like, realized like, oh, man, I got to ship meat from other countries or I can stay in one place and freeze a pond. I'm going to do that one. So he gets rich off this idea. There are ice carnivals pretty much everywhere. New York opens one in Central Park. And then we get to really modern skating with the appearance of Jackson Haines, who is the best figure skater of his time. He's also develops the first skate with the blade permanently fixed to the boot. He also adds a curl to the front, which is a big actually, I think they added the curl earlier. He adds some of the grip to it. So he's advancing skate technology here. He's also the first to incorporate ballet and dance into skating. Before this, figure skating was, as Wen said, figure. You're doing shapes.
And jumping hats.
And jumping hats.
Yeah.
Don't forget the hats. We went on a whole tangent on hats. Right. I feel like you're
downplaying.
You gotta include the hats. Yeah. Three hat jumps.
I still could not do it. Honestly, it is beyond me. So Haines, America, England, they don't like it. They want their figure eight and nothing else. He goes to Sweden and Austria, and they cannot get enough of him. Jackson Haines is the start of figure skating as we know it today. He opens the Vienna School. He dies in 1875, but his students continue it, and they start the first organization, the International Skating Organization, which is one that is still around today.
Pretty much like most of the big time modern figure skaters came from this sort of school, which is why the rules in figure skating are still so traditional.
Right.
It comes from, I mean, Jackson was great, but come on, kind of boring of a dude.
Yeah.
little stiff.
I mean, I just gotta say, I was shocked by like how surprised I was. Like, of course, figure skating as we know it was like someone who just does ballet putting on skates. And yet, yeah, when I read that, I was like, oh my God, of course.
Again, same places that reject the top hat cannot handle this. This is beyond them. Hockey, by the way, starts appearing here, and it's more modern from 1875 Montreal. Before that, you still have shinny and versions going back to like 1600. But we've got to the 20th century now. We've got Oruk Sacha. Appears. Obviously, the jump is still after him. He was the one. I'm sorry, we're going to have my editor fix this at the beginning where I said Haines created the serrated blade. That was Salchow that does the serrated blade. Haines just did the metal straight onto the shoe itself. But this allows for the kind of jumps that Ashley was talking about. You can suddenly grip the ice here. And it is a huge evolution in the sport because before it's like you're gliding on ice. You got to try and make this happen while you're still drifting forward. Here, you can now propel yourself forward and it completely changes the game, so much so that 1908, figure skating becomes an Olympic sport. First winter sport even introduced, but it's they gotta have it. So this is all largely thanks to Salchow.
It's just that good.
Can you imagine, like, this wasn't even a sport?
Yeah.
Like, Jackson Haines made it was what it was in 1865. So, started a school, people started doing it. So he pretty much invented a form and then started a school for that form. And within, like, 50 years, they have to create a whole new Olympics because they're like, we gotta do this.
Yeah. It's insane.
It's just so cool.
It was really impressive. There was a lot of really quick developments too. Aside from the skates, they also figured out how to make ice pure, which, you know, meant they could go faster. There were a lot of developments here. This doesn't really pick up until like the 1980s, but there are already changes. And we also have Sonia Henie appear here, which is one of the first women to make this elegant. In fact, she's wearing a scandalously short skirt to only her knees. which at before this, it was bulky. You were dressed for the ice. And Sonya Henie, she is a Hollywood starlet as well as a 10-time national, what, international medal winner. She's absolutely fantastic and changes the game as well.
The Ronda Rousey of her day.
Yes. But, you know, yes. Less problematic.
Yes.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
The Ronda Rousey of her day.
Yes. But, you know, yes. Less problematic.
Yes. Way less problematic. I'm sure. But she very much like solidifies this sort of expectation of skaters that would come after, that you would look a certain way, have a certain body type, dress a certain way, have like the short skirts, which would kind of later box in a lot of skaters who wanted to break out of that. But she does deserve credit. She's amazing. But she was kind of the big influence of why so many kind of figure skaters have that, I guess, ballet.
Yeah, it does actually directly influence our Where It Went Wrong that we're going to get to soon. She was good at the time. But yeah, but then people again locked in, we're like, okay, well, I guess y'all got to do this now.
It started in 1908, and ladies and pairs, those were both, you know, those were at the very beginning. You could do a pair skate and a lady skate, and they were doing it in long, like, it is a form of sport where your body motions and your body lines, like, the lines have to be clean. It's the same in dance. It's a dance. The fact that they were doing it in long skirts and outfits, right, where you could not see the lines of their bodies, yeah, beforehand, to come out there in an outfit that allows you to actually see that somebody is, like, not, like, turning in their foot in a bad way, right, like, you actually see the lines of their body.
Yeah.
It's a dance competition. Like, right. Of course it's a leg up for someone to be able to see the way your body moves. They went through 5 Olympics before they figured it out.
It took a while. Sonya was wanted to be like, hey guys, maybe you could see how good I am if you could see the technicals on my thigh work. Right. Come on.
I'm just saying, if you went to the ballet and they were all just wearing like
trench coats.
Yeah,
just giant,
you would be pissed. You couldn't see anything. You would just be hoping that the black swan is doing well underneath all that shit.
So, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. This was a huge change. This is obviously happening right after World War I. There's obviously a pause during this point, then a pause during World War II. Post-World War II, Europe has obviously taken a hit. It has allowed America to advance. 1952, ice dancing is added to World Championships. 1968, in the Winter Olympics as a demonstration. 1976 as a medal sport. But in the 40s and 50s, America is advancing here until the crash of Sabena Flight 548.
Which is not where it went wrong, by
no,
the way.
They're so, I mean, honestly, it gets worse.
No.
This is the entire U.S. figure skating team, and many of their coaches were traveling to Prague for the World Championship. So all of the best skaters, anyone who could make the World Championships was here. The flight crashes and kills everyone on it. So much so that it prompted a mandate still around today from U.S. figure skating executives that no team traveling to an international competition can fly together, which my thoughts are like, this was very specific. I get the intent, but honestly, we probably don't need to worry about this particular issue again. Also, it just applies to skating. Yeah. This is not like all athletes for any sport. It's just if this one specific thing is going to happen again.
We must protect our figure skaters specifically, actually.
Yeah, that is such a specific rule for that one thing that happened that one time. Like, they were just like, we have to like spread out our teams and like nobody can ride on the same plane. It's like, no, just the figure skaters. There's something wrong with them. They can't keep planes in the air if you have all the figure skaters in one place.
Yeah, U.S. basketball team goes down, who cares? We can always get basketball players figure skating. That's rare.
We have 12 of them that are good, and we can't keep them all on the same plane.
So, yeah, this is a huge hit to America. Europe starts advance. Also, young Americans start developing. A 12-year-old, Scott Allen, won the silver at the 62 U.S. Championships and then bronze at the 64 Winter Olympics the week of his 15th birthday. He's one of the youngest Olympic medalists ever.
God, you know that guy was insufferable. <at school.
laughs> The worst.
So 1868, we've got Peggy Fleming. It starts to normalize. The USSR and Russia has a 42-year gold medal streak in pair skating from 1964 to 2006. But let's go ahead and jump to like the 80s, because at this point, the rules have changed a little bit. They focused more on the long skate, which is about a 4-minute skate or almost 5-minute skate. It's no longer about the figures. It's about a routine that has to contain a certain rules in moves. And this starts to bring us to the person where it all went wrong. Ashley, you want to tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, that brings us to Tanya Harding. Tanya. So they've created this world of very traditional figure skating, mostly white, mostly rich, very thin, beautiful girls in beautiful outfits. And then comes Tanya Harding, the pride of Oregon, the pride of, I'm sure, beautiful trailer park. And she basically is incredibly talented, but she has a different body type. Her mom makes most of her outfits, so she doesn't really fit into this traditional thing, but she's so good, she can't be ignored. So yeah, so it's her sort of introduction when, to me, skating actually gets really interesting.
I mean, yeah, this was a huge shift, and she's got raw power that we hadn't really seen before in female skating.
Yeah. Oh, Tanya Harding? She could probably jump over 5 hats.
She's killing it.
Give her an amount of hats. Tanya could jump them. Tanya was what? Like, you said her she had a different body type. Yes, Tanya could kick me to death in one swipe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Her thighs are just like, I don't know. Like, she could crush watermelons. That top hat, she's jumping it. There were 5 top hats. Tanya Harding doesn't care. So she was kind of an undeniable voice in figure skating. I think, you know, at the time there was a lot of pushback. She wanted to go to the Olympics and they were kind of like, you're not like who we'd pick. Nancy Kerrigan, so much prettier. So she, from the jump, had, you know, even when she was a junior competing, she had this sort of thing in her head of, I'm not the traditional figure skater, but I know I have the talent. And obviously that kind of conflict's going to lead to issues.
It did. And one of the big issues here too is that because it's an artistic event, it's subjective. There are points that have to be given for skill, but there's also, they get to judge on the music you chose, on the outfit you're wearing. And again, one thing that's often discussed was she was the first person to, or first woman to land the triple axel in competition. This was one of those things where she felt like, if I do this, they've got to give me the medal, no matter how much they dislike me. But it is very middle school clicky, where it's like, okay, but you got to be wearing the right outfit when you do it. And she's skating to rock music.
Yeah. And also you had to have a perfect personal life. They would also look at who you were married to, what kind of family you came from. All of that was considered. If they kind of thought, oh, well, you wouldn't be a good representation on a women's box, we don't know if we actually want to give you a medal.
It's just so crazy to me to think that a competitive sport got so insular and so, like, I mean, yes, it came from ballet, and there is a ballet world in that whole history, and we could do a whole episode on ballet. But it comes from ballet, but the fact that all that was then integrated into the sport, not just the abilities or things like that, but just the culture of it came over.
Yeah.
And then they stuck to it even harder than ballet was.
Yeah, you can't imagine any other sport, like, say, basketball, and they're just like, you're really good, you're the most incredible, powerful player we've ever seen, but your shoes are kind
of ugly. Yeah. Could you imagine them being, like, saying to, like, a young LeBron James, like, we don't like, you know, where you come from, like a generational talent. And they could just be like, judge think that he's polite. Like, yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. And Nancy Kerrigan, obviously, we're going to get to soon, also came from a blue-collar background, but she came from a stable family life, and she also quickly learned how to play the game. And that was something that Tanya refused to do, which I can appreciate from some aspects, but also it was like, again, as long as we're going back to changing the game, Haynes worked to change it. He didn't like what it was, and he sought to make it different. Tanya Harding just kind of wanted to do her thing and wait for it to become different. And it was like, you're really good, but you want the gold medal too. I mean, obviously the problem was just that the whole system was massively screwed at this point and not designed for to be about the skill.
And I think that's the thing people often overlook about Nancy in the sort of, you know, pinning them against each other. It's like Tanya from the trailer, and, you know, Nancy got sort of put in this position of being a princess. She came from a blue collar Massachusetts family. She was, you know, a down home girl, but she did have that traditional slender frame. Her mom knew to get her like the really expensive, nice looking outfits. So she fit the role. You know, she was who they wanted.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of what goes wrong here is that there was a lot where Tanya was wronged, but then there were parts where Tanya was wrong. And she tried to lump it all together. Yeah. And it was like, no, you don't get to put off your bad decisions as to the things done. Those are two separate categories.
Yeah.
And she had a lot of trouble with that. So why don't we get into the start of where it went wrong? Because I think Ashley got a really interesting angle on how it was made even worse. So let's go to 1994. And Ashley, how about you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. 1994. I'm sure most of you know this. 1994, Nancy Kerrigan up against Tanya Harding for the ladies singles competition for the U.S. Figure Skating Championship. And January 6th in Detroit, where they are going to compete to see who is going to place, Nancy Kerrigan gets attacked in a corridor. She's just attacked, random person. No one really sees who did it. But everyone knows that famous shot, Nancy holding her knee. Oh, no, why? Eventually, it comes out that the person behind it is a guy named Shane Stant. I think he's like turned himself in pretty quickly. The whole thing comes crashing down. These people are behind it. His uncle, Derek Smith, Jeff Galooly, who is Tanya Harding's ex-husband at the time, and her bodyguard, Sean Eckert. And so it pretty quickly becomes clear Tanya Harding's team, maybe Tanya Harding herself, had something to do with this attack on Nancy Kerrigan, which shocks the figure skating world because figure skating is not known for this type of controversy.
Yeah, it's not known for like people busting kneecaps with pipes.
No, it is a huge, I mean, nobody could have seen anything like this. Also, everyone involved, this was like Abbott and Costello ice capades. It was, nobody could imagine everyone involved could be this stupid about planning it. Stant, first of all, he's already out of state, but he goes to Massachusetts to stake out Kerrigan's training center for 2 days, not realizing she's not there. And then to avoid suspicion, sits in a parking lot and moves his car every half hour, not realizing this is...
Just genius stuff.
The most suspicious thing you could possibly do on a stakeout is just like move like slightly over on a schedule.
Yeah, people are accustomed to seeing a car bounce around a parking lot. That's totally normal. You also have Tanya Harding feeding him information, and she's like making calls that eventually become suspicious, but she's like calling Nancy Kerrigan's ice rink to be like, hey, so when does she like go hang out there? Just like, just curious. Your friend Tanya.
Hey guys, it's Tanya. Just curious.
Yeah.
I love how the movie tried to cut all this out, by the way.
Yes.
And that was a big problem this is where it combines all three of them, because they are, Eckhart, by the way, is someone that just straight up pretends he has a background in counterterrorism. He has zero background in this, but he talks about hiring the hitmen and he speaks like he has his background. There's an interview where they're like, cool, we looked this up. You did none of this. And he's like, okay, but...
Yeah, and he tries to be like, well, you know, my name wouldn't be on it because it's top secret.
Right.
And you're looking at this guy who couldn't even run a mile.
Right.
And he's trying to say he was like a CIA agent, like doing all these secret things. And it's like, come on, man.
I mean, guys, have y'all met a full-on pathological liar?
Because
like...
That is this guy.
Shit. Well, that is like, that's this guy, but like, it's insane how you could just throw facts at them and they'll pretend that they have something for everything.
Yeah.
Like I've met people like this who will stick. He would probably be to this day be like, well, no, I was counterterrorism. You just never heard about it. Actually, have you seen these films, the Bond films? That's actually few of them were inspired by my mission. Like, he would do that shit no matter what. Like, a pathological liar will not stop. And, like, this is who that guy is.
This is one of those things that was so dumb, it pops in my head regularly. I met a guy once who claimed he had an original copy of the Bible.
Did you ask to see it?
Like, he's at first he's like 1,000 years old, and he said, well, it was probably written by the apostles. Like, all of the apostles got together and co-wrote.
He thinks that that's how the Bible was written. They all like went on a bender one weekend where they're like, guys, you gotta get the book done. My agent says we have to get the book done.
You guys, we were supposed to have the chapters in days ago.
They're all just doing lines of coke and just like, come on, put that in. Guys, we've told the same story 3 times just from different perspectives.
Yeah, no, man, that's part of it.
Some of this is different than the other. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, so everyone involved in this is this kind of liar. And honestly, this was one of the things that was so infuriating when I watched these documentaries on this, was this denial of reality, because some of them are just lying, but also there's some of them that are like, no, I'm just going to pretend reality is the thing I want it to be. And it is so infuriating to see.
Which is most definitely the tactic Tanya went with. She kind of decided her reality was true, where she was the victim, and she stuck to it. Even well after, when they tried to get her to apologize to Nancy Kerrigan, she would just constantly refuse. She would still paint herself as the victim.
I saw a thing where she said she apologized to Nancy, and she complained about how rude Nancy was for not accepting it. And it was like, how do you think that you were the one that was wronged here? I had to replay it. I was so angry.
If you read Nancy's account of that apology, she's like, it really wasn't an apology. It was just kind of her being like, sorry about all that mess.
Yeah.
No. She apologized for having surrounded herself with people that would do such a thing is how it was. Was how it was presented.
Infuriating behavior. I think because we have all met someone like that, and it was like, I'm sorry you made me so mad I had to hit your mom with my car kind of stuff. And it was just absolutely insane. So this was where it started to go wrong. Again, we could have used the plane crash. We could have used this event itself. But talking to Ashley about this, I thought she had such an interesting point about what happened, because this was a reality, and then they made a movie about it.
Yes. So, like, this is what actually, you know, we get to it, and it's like, Tanya's not perfect in this situation, and then we get to the movie I, Tanya, which everybody probably saw, probably loved, Margot Robbie, she's so good, came out in 2017, and it changes the story in some big ways.
Yeah.
Yes, it is right that Tanya was seen as an outsider. She came from a poor background. She was an underdog. But at the same time, she was successful in skating. Like, yes, she wasn't Nancy Kerrigan, but at the same time, this is a time when figure skating's opening up. There are people of color doing it, women of color, especially Black women, Asian women. So there is a side where Tanya's still kind of given a lot more preferential treatment than them.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
That's cool. They don't really talk about that. But they make this movie where she's the absolute hero. She is, you know, just sort of forced into this situation by all of these horrible people around her who are abusing her. But it's not necessarily reliable, right? Because she was a horrible person who actually was involved. And the movie tries to just erase any hand she had, which is, they never would have done this if it wasn't for Tanya. When you actually read the FBI transcript of what she said, and Nancy Kerrigan also read it and said, after reading that, there was no doubt in my mind that Tanya Harding was involved. When you look at the details of the phone calls made, which Tanya repeatedly tried to lie about.
Right.
She tried to originally say in a 1998 interview that she only called the skating rink where Nancy Kerrigan practiced because she wanted to settle a bet with her husband.
Right.
She was like, no, I want it. And her ex-husband, Jeff Galooly, this whole time is like, no, Tanya called because she wanted us to know when to attack. And that's, his story never changes. From the first time he interviews to the FBI, he did a Deadspin article a while ago, never changes his story. Tanya's side is, oh, I wanted to settle a bet. And then she was like, oh, no, well, I called a reporter to get the information on the rink, because I wanted Nancy to sign a poster for me for a girl. And that reporter immediately goes to the police and is like, that's not what happened. I gave her the skating rink information and the address. She never said anything about a poster. And so then once that happened, Tanya couldn't lie. So then she changes her story again. And she's like, yeah, no, it was again kind of to say to do the bet, but also I cared about the poster. It's just all over the place. And she still kind of sticks to this day. In 2014, she did an interview in The Price of Gold where she still was just like, no, I was just trying to settle a bet from Jeff, because she still isn't really holding herself accountable. And then you also have the fact that when she made these phone calls, she wrote down the address, Nancy Kerrigan's name, and the time she practiced herself on an envelope
right.
in her handwriting. She just wrote it down. And the FBI was like, we confirm this matches your handwriting. So like, what?
To which she says, no, it didn't. And I was like,
yeah,
dude, they've got an
defense
FBI
was just,
lab.
No, it didn't.
And everyone was like, well, good enough.
Yeah, and the FBI and prosecutors were like, it was a complete match. Not even like 90. They were like, it was a complete match from other writing samples we have. But Tanya still to this day says that it was never proven to match.
Yeah. And every other person involved has implicated Tanya Harding as being in on it yeah. from the beginning. They've all said it. They've all stuck with their stories. Hers consistently fluctuated. And yeah. like everyone has said, no, she helped plan this.
And here's kind of the biggest tip that she's lying. If she called to get the address for legitimate reasons, just to settle a bet with her husband and to get a poster signed, why lie about the handwriting being a match? Wouldn't
yes.
it make sense that she would write down the address she just called to get?
Right. And also practice times. Do you need practice times
yeah.
to get in?
Why change that key detail, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the only way that the guy could have stalked her was to know where the Tony Kent arena was. That's where Nancy Kerrigan practiced. And they were seen on camera a million times. So very clear, the evidence, her statements changing. She had something to do with it. But this movie just chooses to paint her as a hero. And it's dangerous to me because it erases sort of the reality of who really was an underdog in figure skating at that
yeah.
time. Because really, and you see this a bit in the movie, but when Tanya was going to compete after this assault, obviously she had a lot to prove. She wanted to prove that she was innocent. She wanted to prove that she deserved it when she got the chance to go. But at the same time, she stopped practicing. She
right.
stopped practicing. She like stopped really working with her coach. The only place she could really practice was this mall. And obviously after the controversy, she couldn't really do that because so many people were just like watching her. So leading up to this, she wasn't in really a good place to win. People were kind of like, she's not trying. She's not doing what she should be. And that's exactly what happened. She goes, she does a horrible job. And, you know, she couldn't even like nail her triple axel, her like perfect move. It's all disappointing.
And again, lack of personal responsibility is she says, well, my blade fell off and they put it on wrong. Maybe they did, but the problem is everything she says is that it's always somebody else's fault.
It's always someone else's fault.
It's never once been Tanya Harding.
Never her fault. She does a thing where she's like, the laces on my skates were messed up, and she like has this false start, and it's so dramatic and sad. And she doesn't win. She doesn't place great. I think in the end, she finished in eighth, but she had to do a reskate. So she did this false start thing with a broken skate lace in the long program. And she ends up finishing in eighth behind Oksana Bayul, who wins the gold, and Nancy Kerrigan, who wins the silver. A lot of people felt that Nancy was robbed, but really what it came down to is that the figure skating people were like, you have too much controversy, so now we can't even give you the gold because you kind of broke your image as this perfect girl. So even there, Nancy Kerrigan got screwed over.
By getting the shit yeah. knocked out of you, you have ruined
our image of you.
Yeah, exactly. But like my thought process is this was the biggest like sports story of that
oh, yeah.
time. Like you have some really interesting baseball runs. You have the 90s Bulls and everything. But like this dominated headlines.
This was the most watched Olympic sporting event ever, still ever. And it was a resurgence for the field. It was absolutely huge. There'd been nothing like it.
Yeah.
But y'all want to hear something really fucked up about the whole
Please.
Thing? So Tanya Harding, she finished first in the U.S. Championships to qualify. Nancy Kerrigan, who was injured, they give her a chance to like practice. Here's how they're thinking. They could get the most eyeballs and they could get the most revenue and everything if they have Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan skate in this Olympics.
Right.
They want them both in there. And they bump Michelle Kwan.
Right.
Yes.
Who had placed second in the U.S. Championships. She had just finished right behind Tanya Harding. Okay. And then they just kind of view Nancy Kerrigan practice, they say, yep, she can still skate. And they bump the second place finisher for two white girls. Right. Yes.
And this is where it gets so gross that Aitania just tries to push her in as this hero when it's like she had such a horrible impact on women of color in figure skating through her actions. She centered everything around her. That same year, 1994, Saria Benali, a wonderful black figure skater from France, she was competing in the World Olympics or the World Championships against Yuka Sato. And Benali is amazing. She is one of the few women who was able to do a backflip, which is a move that was banned in the 70s. And she was like, I don't care. I'm strong. I know how to do it. I'm going to do it. And even though it was cool and everything else in her program was perfect, because she did that backflip, they disqualified her. It gave her a horrible reputation. She was black, so obviously she didn't fit this image. And so in 1994, basically, she skates what judges said was a perfect program. Sato also does. It's between the two of them, and the judges go with Sato. And they say it's because of her artistry, but it basically is clear that it's because she's smaller. It comes down to that physical body issue of them seeing this black woman as larger. Kind of the same issue that Tanya faced, you know, but you have someone who kind of got the brunt of it. She never got that chance to get the attention and fame. You know, she was just constantly booed and is kind of more of a controversial figure and a hero, but nobody cares or talks about what happened to her because everybody's talking about Tanya Harding in 1994.
I can't imagine seeing someone do a backflip on ice in arguably the coolest thing I could possibly witness in my fucking life.
Yeah.
And then just be like,
doesn't count.
No.
It's too good.
If you read the newspaper accounts, it's so hilarious because they're all just like the Boston Globe was like, illegal but astounding. Oh my gosh.
Look, it should just be a thing. If you do something that breaks the rules, but it's the coolest fucking thing in the world, you change that rule, because why would you deny your sport that kind of amazing thing?
Absolutely. Yeah,
the Hamilton Spectator, this Canadian newspaper, said my favorite thing. They said it was the most elaborative expletive in Olympic history. The biggest fuck.
Oh my
you.
God.
Like,
ah, God, put it on my fucking tombstone if I did that. That's amazing.
Like, give me her movie. Come on. Like,
right.
When you compare that to Tanya Harding and this just victim act she plays, she deserves credit for overcoming her horrible situations. But does she deserve to be this, like, just wonderful, beautiful hero that Aitania tries to paint?
No, I think that is such a great point, because this was like, this could have been a fine story where you told what happened, but as soon as you, and also she did go through some horrible stuff. You can say she went through some horrible stuff. That doesn't make what happened excusable. And they tried to paint it at this angle where she went through so much horrible stuff that it's okay, I guess. And it's like, this shouldn't even be the story. Why don't you just tell what happened and then give the people who really deserve this movie their own movie? Why don't you just make this little thing on the side
and then make the real movie? You know, she did face a lot of abuse from Jeff Galouli. She says, you know, that it was akin to a coercive relationship. That's very real. But at the same time, it's like, just because you're a victim doesn't mean you get to victimize other people. And also, you see that she tries to paint it that way as, he forced me, he did this. But if you actually look at her actions, even leading up to the trials in Detroit before the attack, she had stopped practicing the triple axel well in advance because she knew she wouldn't have to use it, because she knew Nancy wasn't going to be a threat.
She didn't land it a lot.
Yeah.
After she did it that first time, she did it at several other competitions, and she just fell out. So of course she didn't practice it anymore because she didn't want to have to use it.
Yeah. And so she like came up with her backup plan. And it's like, when you see that she was taking care of herself like that and obviously not pushing herself to be sure, like, oh, I'm going to be the best. I'm going to, you know, as she originally kind of was, you know, earlier in her career when it was more of that kind of pure drive, it's very clear, oh, this woman did some evil stuff.
Yeah. And I think that, again, these would be fine separate stories, but as soon as they tried to angle it at the end towards, she went through some legitimately horrible stuff. She was an absolute victim of her mother, of her husband. These are real stories that don't have anything to do with the fact that she had someone kneecapped or possibly did. Again, she was never charged with this. She was, by the way, at the end, charged with hindering prosecution because she knew about this. They could at least prove after the fact and did not report it. And I was sympathetic to what she went through, but not what she did to others. And because of that, I just felt like, why are we telling this story when there are some really good stories that should be told?
Yeah, she gets banned from figure skating for life. And in the movie, they really try to like make that sound heartbreaking. Like, oh my gosh, she can't even be like a professional coach. She's fully banned, obviously. She had a woman beat up.
Right.
And I mean, when you realize kind of the crimes that she actually avoided, it's like, yeah, no, she should be banned. Like, she, I'm absolutely comfortable with that.
Yeah, no, she came out pretty on top.
Right.
She has an Oscar, like, she has an Oscar nominated movie.
she got to go. I think they took her to the awards. She got a Suzanne Stevens song written about her, man.
That's the dream.
That's goals right
Margot
there.
Margot Robbie is playing you in a movie of like your life is great. You're doing fine.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, she had some down moments. You probably saw her on like the celebrity death match or celebrity boxing was a thing they tried to do like in the late 90s.
Yeah, no, celebrity death match was the claymation. The claymation. MTV, yeah.
But there's like a brief period when they tried to make like a show with like celebrity, like as sports people trying boxing. She was one of the people.
Yeah, I think they even put that in the movie.
They
really should have dug into her sort of career once she was banned. It gets really depressing, like when she turns to all these reality shows and it gets really dark. And there's like, she gets like the cops called on her. She gets in legal trouble with like abuse situations with her new partner. Although it's the other way, she gets in trouble for abusing her partner, a guy she was dating. So, yeah, no, she's in this dark place. I think as a society, we were all pretty content to let Tonya Harding disappear. And then we get I, Tonya. And now all of a sudden she's like a feminist hero who deserves like to have her story retold. Kind of like they did with Monica Lewinsky, which I think is fair. Monica Lewinsky is pure victim, pure someone who was not treated well by the media. Tonya Harding, can't say that's true. I think the media gave her chance time and time again to come on and apologize to Nancy to get her career back. There was in fact an entire thing in like 1998 where they were like, Tonya's going to come back to the ice. And they invited her like back into the world and they did this whole, and it's like the last big figure skating thing she's ever done. So it's like they even gave her that opportunity that you don't see people of color in figure skating get.
Yeah. And there was even a New York Times article where they, after I Tonya came out, where they compared her to Monica Lewinsky, which I was mad about because this should not be a comparison. And she said, no, Monica Lewinsky shouldn't be forgiven. Don't compare me to her.
Yeah.
She disrespected the office.
God.
I was like, no.
And that was the other thing. Is that Tonya Harding was like, Tonya Harding was like, fuck Monica Lewinsky and feminism. Also in that same article, they're like, so Sufjan Stevens wrote a song about you. Don't you love that? And she's just like, I hate that stupid song. Suzanne Stevens.
Not Suzanne Stevens. No.
Yeah,
far.
And I was like, come on, how dare you? How dare you insult that? He made two versions of it, girl.
Like, Jesus Christ.
How do you
can
not
you
appreciate
it? Imagine Monica Lewinsky was the most abused person by the media of the 90s.
Yeah.
And like for her to just be like, no.
Yeah. No.
She fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, it just shows like Tonya Harding is so dedicated to being a trash person when people just give her every opportunity to just, all she had to do is say one nice thing like, yeah, I am, you know, me and Monica, just the sisterhood. And it would have been like, put her on t-shirts. Oh my God, hashtag Tonya's back. Like she could have been front lines of this like white feminist movement. And instead, she just has to be Tonya Harding. She can't be anybody else.
After that movie came out, you know, people like went out for interviews. Like she had like a moment where she could have like slid back in, but she's such an abrasive personality that everyone was just like, no, we like this version better. We like the make-believe
we'll
version
just enjoy
of you
this
way
movie
more than you.
And pretend you don't exist as an actual living human.
I think that is a fantastic summation of it. And everything that went wrong, what we loved was the entire history of skating and figure skating. It has a deep, rich background that hopefully we can explore more in the future with a more diverse group, because it still is very limited and it is much more popular. There's opportunity now. If we can give others that opportunity, it's there. What went so horribly wrong was surprisingly not the plane crash, not even someone getting kneecapped, but when they made a movie to rewrite it all. That was where it went so very wrong. But as always, we have to defend it now. In their defense, Ashley, what do you have in their defense for I, Tonya and Tonya Harding?
In their defense, most people think figure skating's super boring and a movie about it. You gotta spice things up. So they did that. In their defense, they did perfectly recreate Tanya's programs.
Yes.
They truly did.
Margot Robbie did a wonderful job of every just facial expression that you see Tanya have on the ice. She nails all of it. So I did think it did a good job of capturing the wonder of figure skating. This actually was what inspired me to get into quad skating. I got so upset about Tanya Harding. I said, I will become the first Black woman to do a triple axle in quad skates, because it's harder. It's heavier to do it in quad skates.
Yeah.
So that inspired me. So in their defense, they probably have inspired a generation of women of color to reclaim figure skating just from pure anger. So that's good. In their defense, I mean, Allison Janney's wonderful, always.
Honestly, I was fully sold at we might get to see Ashley Ray do a triple axel. I was in 100% at that point.
In quad skates.
In quad skates. Yeah, absolutely amazing.
First to do it in quad skates.
There actually was a man who did it in quad skates in like the 80s. There's like a very grainy YouTube video of it. And he's just like in a roller rink like you would see that you would have your birthday party at. And it's like the most amazing thing. People are just kind of like, we don't know what to tell you, man. This isn't an Olympic sport. You're not going to be able to go anywhere with this.
Can you imagine like lacing up for a children's birthday party and like you just look out of the corner of your eye and a guy's just doing the most amazing like roller skating you've ever seen in your life. And you're like, go on out there, kids. Skate around that guy.
You guys are completely equal. There's nowhere he can go with this. This is the same. You are the same.
There's no world championship of quad skating. So, you know, but we're out here and we are here to say, you know, we're cooler than Tanya Harding. We're cooler than figure skating.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, despite all of this really hasn't changed. Despite this whole controversy, didn't really become more welcoming to people of color, didn't become more welcoming to different body types. So Tanya just did all this mess and all she got out of it was a movie that made her look good. But in their defense,
Nancy Kerrigan got on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, she got on Dancing with the Stars. I don't think she made it far. I really think we need a movie about Nancy because I think she's the one who needs respect. She got kind of pushed into this role of being this pretty princess when she's not. I have more Twitter followers than her. That's sad. That's sad. Nancy got her spotlight stolen from her, too.
I hope she is mailing you her medal right now. I didn't realize she had more Twitter followers. I'm done.
It's just sad. I saw that and I was like, this country isn't right. I shouldn't have this. Nancy should.
It's just impolite.
You know, she worked so hard.
That is a fantastic summation, and I hope helps direct what the future of figure skating and quad skating should be. I think this is a much better direction if we can help bring Ashley Ray's vision to life here, because it is far too limiting. It is a very impressive sport that is open to like four people. And
look, figure skating went from not even a thing to an Olympic sport where they created, once again, a new Olympics for it. In like 50 years. Yeah. So like we can figure this out.
We
have smartphones. We can cut that down to 10. Yeah.
And someday we get quad skating into the Olympics.
Absolutely.
We're going to get the fucking fall Olympics with quad skating.
Okay. We are writing that petition right now. We hope you guys will sign it.
The fall Olympics performed every 3 years. Fuck it. I don't care.
And like the competition is just like recreating things you do at a roller rink birthday. Like you have to do the like chicken dance. You know.
You have to do limbo. Yeah, you have to do the limbo.
How low can you go?
You got to try and skate to the bathroom and wash off orange soda.
I'd medal in it, my friend.
Well, this is a fantastic recap, guys. We hope you will sign this petition that we should make exist. We've got time. We're going to make that happen. If you enjoyed this episode, please give it 5 stars. Subscribe. It helps us so much. Ashley Ray, thank you so much for coming on, for educating us on so much. Your research on this was fantastic. I learned so much.
Incredible.
Thank you so much. This is a topic I'm passionate about.
And guys, if you enjoy this, please go listen to Ashley Ray's podcast, TV I Say with Ashley Ray, because you see how she breaks stuff down. So imagine this, but with all of TV. You don't want to miss it. And we'll see you guys next week. See you next week, Gwen.
Bye.
Bye.